What's up? It's me, Don Tolliver. If I could describe the open ear bud, I would describe it as very seamless. It's like you clip it onto your ear, and then sometimes you can forget it's there, but it's not going anywhere because it's like clipped. It's kind of crazy. If I could bring my music with me wherever I go, it'd just make life easier and seamless without interruption. To be able to have the music on hand like that without any interruptions would be great. Check out Bose.com for more.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast.
Have you ever thought about your relationship with money? What if I told you that was the one thing that could change everything about your financial situation? Dow Janes is here to help you unlearn what you think you know about money. Founders Britt and Lori Ann are on a mission to get more money in the hands of more women. Through their free online classes, they teach you how to overcome financial fears, tackle debt, and learn to invest. Go to DowJanes.com/Ashley for access to their free class. That is DowJanes.com/Ashley.
1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men experience domestic abuse in their lifetime. And nearly half of survivors delay leaving because they can't bring their pets with them. Purina started the Purple Leash Project to help eliminate one of the many barriers domestic abuse survivors face, a lack of pet-friendly domestic violence shelters. Through the Purple Leash Project, Purina is helping to create more pet-friendly domestic violence shelters across the country so abuse survivors and their pets can escape and heal together. Visit Purina.com/purple to get involved.
The 2024 presidential election is here. MSNBC has the in-depth coverage and analysis you need. Our reporters are on the ground. Steve Kornacki is at the big board breaking down the races. Rachel Maddow and our Decision 2024 team will provide insight as results come in. And the next day, Morning Joe will give you perspective on what it all means for the future of our country. Watch coverage of the 2024 presidential election Tuesday beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And we continue with Our American Stories. Our next story comes to us from Pulitzer Prize-winning author and journalist Scott Shane. Shane is the author of Flee North, Forgotten Hero, and the Fight for Freedom in Slavery's Borderland. Let's take a listen.
The central character of my book is a guy named Thomas Smallwood. And I just want to take you to what he was up to in 1842. He's a man who had been born in slavery, had basically educated himself, built a business as a shoemaker, and he was living about a 15-minute walk from the United States Capitol in southeast Washington. By day, he's running this shoemaking business to support his family. He has a wife and 4 kids and a 5th kid on the way. At night, he's organizing these mass escapes by the wagon load. And even as he's doing all this during the day and at night, he somehow is finding time to write up a new dispatch for an abolitionist newspaper in Albany, New York, which used the real names of the slaveholders and the real names of the people escaping from them, and basically were based on the satirical style of Charles Dickens, and he wrote them using a pseudonym from Charles Dickens because everything he was doing was illegal and he was in danger of arrest at any moment. And what he wrote was the only real-time, first-hand accounts of escapes from slavery ever published. They were so much in real-time that sometimes he writes he had held a particular dispatch for a week or two to make sure the people he's writing about had made it to safety in upstate New York or Canada. So this is Thomas Smallwood. His own experience of slavery had been relatively benign. It happened that he was inherited along with his sister by a woman who then made a second marriage to a man by the name of John Ferguson, who was a minister and somewhat anti-slavery, certainly somewhat embarrassed to find himself as a slaveholder. But he was encumbered by the terms of a will, so he could only buy Smallwood and his sister essentially from his new wife and her children. And he did that, and he said to Smallwood when Smallwood was 15 that he would give him his freedom at the age of 30, but he would have to pay him back over time. So John Ferguson and his wife, the slaveholder, taught Smallwood to read, which was quite unusual at the time. And Smallwood talks about how he impressed the neighbors by being able to spell as a young boy words of two syllables like baker and cider, he says. And later he worked for another guy as a household servant for an educator by the name of John McLeod in Washington. And this guy was apparently quite a fervent educator, and he had adult children of a similar mindset, and all of them helped kind of guide Thomas in his reading and encourage him. And so by the time he had completed the purchase of his freedom, and he was a free man at the age of 30, he was extremely well-educated. He read widely in contemporary literature, in ancient literature, ancient philosophy. He knew an awful lot. So at that time, he's married, he's building his shoemaking business, and he gets involved in something called the colonization movement. Colonization was the idea that African Americans should start a new life in some other country, that basically their prospects here were dim and they would do better to go elsewhere. Usually it was Liberia in West Africa, which was a new country founded by the American Colonization Society. And for a while, Smallwood was quite intrigued by this possibility. But then he had a change of heart because he realized that, in fact, a lot of slaveholders were behind the Colonization Society. And one of their key goals was to get black people, particularly free black people, out of the United States. So it was really more of an ethnic cleansing operation. Baltimore was the largest free black community in the country, and free blacks significantly outnumbered enslaved blacks in the cities in Washington and Baltimore. So he turned against that movement, but he was still extremely pained and angry about slavery, not so much about his own experience, but about much of what he had witnessed, and wanted to do something about it. And just about that time, this guy Torrey comes from New England and moves to Washington, theoretically to become a newspaper correspondent for little abolitionist papers across the North. And the two of them get together because Smallwood has heard that Torrey was arrested in Annapolis, Maryland, the capital, after going there to try to write about a convention of slaveholders. And they spot him and figure out that he's not on their side, and a mob gathers, and anyway, he's taken to jail more or less for his own safety. But this all gets written up in the paper, and Smallwood reads about it, and he thinks, who is this crazy white man who was confronting the slaveholders, you know, essentially on their own turf? I want to meet this guy. And it happened that Smallwood's wife, Elizabeth, did the laundry for the boarding house in D.C. where Torrey was living. So he asks his wife, can you introduce me to this guy, Torrey? And she sets up a meeting. And it's so interesting to me to think about this. This is in January of 1842, these two guys. So Smallwood's about 40, Torrey's about 28. And they're kind of opposites in many ways. They meet across their generation apart. They meet across, of course, the chasm of race. Torrey's grandfather, who raised him after his parents died of tuberculosis, had served in Congress. It was quite a prominent family. He'd gone to Exeter and Yale. Smallwood, born in slavery, totally self-educated, never went to school a day in his life. So they're so different, and yet by the time the two of them meet, they both seem equally dedicated to the cause of doing something to combat slavery, but also a little bit tired of talking about it. They want to do something practical. And so as they talk, they come up with this scheme to start helping them escape. And there are several things that they're doing that are a little bit unusual. They want to do it not by ones and twos, but by the wagon load. So they start packing wagons with 10, 15, even 20 men, women, and children, covering it over, disguising it in some way, and they'll take off in the middle of the night and head north. They also, at the beginning, were recruiting people to escape. They weren't waiting for people to say, hey, I'd kind of like to escape. Do you know anyone who can help me? They would actually, Smallwood would actually approach people and say, you know, we got a wagon load going, you want to be aboard. And the third thing would be that they had a larger strategy in mind, and that was to demoralize the slaveholders.
And you're listening to Pulitzer Prize winning author and journalist Scott Shane tell the story of an unlikely collaboration between a former slave, Thomas Smallwood, and a white man interested in freeing slaves too, his name Charles Torrey, and how the two together went to try and free not just one or two slaves at a time, but slaves by the wagon load. Revolutionary idea at the time, and doing it overground, not underground, even going so far as to recruit those slaves for escape. The story of Thomas Smallwood and his partner in crime, because it was a crime then to do these things, Charles Torrey. Their story continues here on Our American Stories.
Just a few years ago, only 3% of domestic violence shelters accepted pets, meaning many abuse survivors had to choose between staying in a difficult situation for their pet or leaving their pet behind. 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men experience domestic abuse in their lifetime, and nearly half of survivors delay leaving because they can't bring their pets with them. Purina believes in the healing power of pets, particularly for survivors of abuse. They believe pets and people are better together, which is one of the many reasons they started the Purple Leash Project. Through the Purple Leash Project, Purina is helping break down one of the many barriers abuse survivors face: the lack of pet-friendly domestic violence shelters. Purina has helped increase the amount of pet-friendly shelters across the country from 3% to nearly 20% through the Purple Leash Project. With more pet-friendly domestic violence shelters, survivors and their pets can escape and heal together. Visit Purina.com/purple to get involved.
The 2024 presidential election is here. MSNBC has the in-depth coverage and analysis you need. Our reporters are on the ground. Steve Kornacki is at the big board breaking down the races. Rachel Maddow and our Decision 2024 team will provide insight as results come in. And the next day, Morning Joe will give you perspective on what it all means for the future of our country. Watch coverage of the 2024 presidential election tomorrow beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC.
This is Danielle Robay from The Bright Side, because you're worth it. Growing up, I remember hearing that famous L'Oreal Paris tagline and feeling empowered. With those four words, L'Oreal Paris broke the mold. Beauty was for all of us. For me, knowing my worth means being able to be my authentic self. It's more than just getting that perfect lash. Knowing your worth is embracing the things that make you beautiful, inside and out. With a commitment to innovation and quality, L'Oreal Paris delivers groundbreaking products that help you take on the world. Through their Women of Worth program, they recognize 10 exceptional female nonprofit leaders each year, offering grants, mentorship, and a platform to share their inspiring stories. Discover more about these extraordinary women and embrace your beauty with L'Oreal Paris. Because you're worth it.
Buying a home can be overwhelming these days. From start to finish, Navy Federal Credit Union's new home buying center has everything you need to get to closing with confidence, like verified pre-approval. A pre-approval shows sellers you're a serious buyer, potentially giving you a competitive advantage when making an offer. Realty Plus connects you with an agent for continued support every step of the way. Lock and Shop lets you lock in your interest rate for up to 60 days while you shop. No refi rate drop gives you peace of mind to buy now, knowing that if interest rates fall, you could decrease your rate without having to refinance for a small $250 fee. If you're overwhelmed by shopping for a new home, Navy Federal's New Home Buying Center has solutions for every step of the process. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loans subject to approval. Call 1-888-842-6328 for details about credit costs.
Attention parents and grandparents. Are you searching for the perfect gift for your kids this holiday season? Give the gift of adventure that will last all year long. A Guardian bike. The easiest, safest, and quickest bikes for kids to learn on. Kids are learning to ride in just one day. No training wheels needed. What sets Guardian bikes apart? Designed especially for stability, they're low to the ground with a wide wheelbase and ultra-lightweight frames, offering superior control and balance. This design gives young riders the ability to learn in just one day without tears or frustration. Guardian bikes are the only kids' bikes designed and assembled in a USA factory, ensuring top-notch quality and durability. They were also featured on Shark Tank and are the New York Times Wirecutter Top Kids Bike Pick for 2024. Join the hundreds of thousands of happy families by getting a Guardian bike today. Their holiday season sales have begun, offering the biggest deal of the year. Save up to 25% on bikes. No code needed. Plus, get free shipping and a free bike lock and pump with your first purchase after signing up for their newsletter. Visit GuardianBikes.com to take advantage of these deals and secure your holiday season gifts today. Happy riding!
And we continue with our American stories. Born into slavery by the 1840s, Thomas Smallwood was free and self-educated. He recruited a young white abolitionist named Charles Torrey, and together these two set out to do something practical to combat slavery. That was to, one, recruit slaves, and two, arrange for their escape by the wagon load, and three, demoralize the slaveholders themselves. Here again is Scott Shane.
The idea was, if we essentially make off with these people's wealth, because their human property was extremely valuable at the time, they'll just realize that the idea of enslaving people is not going to work, and they'll change their ways and they'll start hiring workers instead of enslaving them. And they had some success at that. Smallwood talks about overhearing some people whose, as he puts it, human property walked off. And he overhears them saying, "I'm never going to buy another slave." And that was sort of a sensible decision in those circumstances. I calculated roughly, I was looking at a particular wagon load that Smallwood describes in some detail, and I made a rough estimate that the value of the 15 people on this wagon on the slave market at the time would have been something like $200,000 in today's dollars. So you're talking about a fairly good-sized bank robbery every time a wagon load goes north. And you're talking about people losing a large share of their wealth. So their dream was that you would undermine slavery, sort of slaveholder by slaveholder, and you would also be doing it in this splashy way. You know, if you have 15 people leaving in a wagon, they come from several households. So a number of slaveholders are going to wake up in the morning and say, "Where is everybody?" And this would get a lot of attention. And they're in Washington, D.C. They're in the Capitol. And some of the people whose slaves they are helping to escape are members of Congress, members of the cabinet, other public employees who have brought their enslaved workers from somewhere else and brought them to Washington. So they thought that would have a particular resonance. And so that, too, sort of set their operation apart. So part of my story, I looked at a third character in addition to Thomas Smallwood and Charles Torrey. The third guy that I looked at was Hope Slatter. And their paths, these three men's paths, cross in various ways. And Hope Slatter was the leading slave trader in the region from the late 1830s to the late 1840s. So these guys are, in a strange sense, They're almost competitors. So they're really enemies. One of the things that was quite interesting about Hope Slater, though, was in addition to the drive to make money, which he made a whole lot of in his 10 years or so in Baltimore, buying and selling human beings, he also wanted respect that would match with his wealth. But he didn't get it. It seems that the slaveholders, even though they're quite dependent on and did business with the slave traders, needed somebody to look down on. And a lot of them chose to look down on the slave traders. So he was constantly trying to curry favor with the sort of powers about town and about the state of Maryland. At one point, he actually loans his big fancy carriage for the day to the visiting president of the United States, James Polk. And Polk uses Slater's carriage, and it's written up in the paper. So Slater's always on the lookout for ways to become respectable, so to speak. At one point, they're building a big new Methodist church, and one of the ways they're raising money for it is they're selling the pews. In other words, you pay a big chunk of money, and that's going to be your family pew forever. So Slater buys a pew in this church, but once again, he's frustrated because the family who's bought the pew behind his, the man announces they're not going to ever attend that church as long as Slater and his family are attending, because he doesn't want to look at this guy while worshiping. So Slater does not find the respectability that he is seeking, and eventually he retires essentially from the slave trade in Baltimore and moves far to the south, finds people who can give him the respect that he's been seeking all these years. Once I learned that Thomas Smallwood had written these dispatches to this Albany paper, which was originally called Tocsin of Liberty, which is an old word for bell, so essentially Liberty Bell, I checked in the Library of Congress and found that the largest run of that newspaper still in existence appeared to be in the Boston Public Library. Unfortunately, they were shut down this 2020 during the pandemic, but eventually I got through to some people and they took up my cause, and eventually they dug these out of a warehouse and put them on microfilm, and I went to the library and downloaded them all onto a thumb drive and spent several months reading Smallwood's dispatches. So I'm reading along at one point, and I find him addressing a slaveholder by real name and talking about how perhaps his enslaved workers got away by that underground railroad or steam balloon that one of your city constables was swearing about the other day. And I think that's kind of funny. He's talking about Underground Railroad, but in a way that it sounds like it's not in common parlance. Anyway, he elaborates later in another dispatch on that story, and he names the constable. And essentially, this is a fairly notorious police constable in Baltimore and Washington who made a lot of money as a slave catcher. Anyway, this guy was understandably frustrated that large numbers of people were escaping and he could not figure out where they were going. And so apparently in some kind of outburst of frustration, he said they must be leaving by Underground Railroad or steam balloon. Those were sort of non-existent technologies. There were railroads, but there were no underground railroads. So it was essentially like somebody might say they must have been teleported to another state. They must have been abducted by aliens. In other words, I have no idea where they're going. And Smallwood heard about this and ends up loving it because it's a compliment to him, to his escape operation, the people who are making the escapes. So he starts using this phrase, Underground Railroad, and just sort of builds a world around it in his imagination. He starts advising the slaveholders in his dispatches to report to the office of the Underground Railroad in Washington to inquire about their lost property. He appoints himself general agent of all the branches of the National Underground Railroad. he at one point talks about how he can't reveal the secret of the Underground Railroad, which is known only to the president and his cabinet. And so he's just having a good old time using the Underground Railroad, this mythical transport system, as a way to beat up on the slaveholders and make fun of them and their slave-catching police allies. So, you know, I'm reading this stuff and wondering, you know, it sounds like this is the origin of the use of that phrase and that concept. Could that be? And I start poking around. It turns out there are some old stories about where that term comes from, but they don't hold up to much scrutiny, and most scholars had rejected them as folklore. And then I went into the big 19th century newspaper databases that have been built up over the last 20 years. The ones I mainly use were newspapers.com and genealogybank.com. And I just plugged in that phrase, and sure enough, all of the early uses of Underground Railroad were from Smallwood's dispatches and other articles. His white sidekick, Charles Torrey, becomes editor of that paper. So Smallwood is sending these dispatches to Torrey, and Torrey begins to use the term Underground Railroad in his articles for the paper. But that's where it all seems to start. And within a couple of years, it sort of lost its origin as a joke and as a way of mocking the slaveholders. And it's just become a way of describing escapes, a sort of generic term for escapes from slavery, especially those using help along the way. So now I can say with confidence that that is actually the solution to that historical mystery, and Thomas Smallwood is the guy who gave the Underground Railroad its name.
And a terrific job on the production, editing, and storytelling by our own Greg Hengler. And a special thanks to Pulitzer Prize-winning author and journalist Scott Shane. He's the author of Flee North, The Forgotten Hero, and The Fight for Freedom in Slavery's Borderland. And we learn where that term Underground Railroad comes from. There was nothing underground about it, but boy, was Smallwood and his pal Charles Torrey trying to stick it to the slave owners, working together to end slavery in their own way. Their story here on Our American Stories.
Sex, politics, IVF, mental illness. I bet you have rarely, if ever, heard these topics discussed in church. And I bet you've got questions about them that you'd love to ask a pastor. Well, there's a podcast that tackles these taboo topics. I'm Pastor Mike Novotny with Time of Grace Ministry, and in my new podcast, Taboo Questions with Pastor Mike Novotny, I answer questions from people just like you as I open up the Bible to give answers that point people back to the truth and especially to our Savior Jesus. To listen, just search Taboo Questions with Pastor Mike.
Meet the Bose Ultra Open Earbuds. A reinvention of what earbuds could be, and the perfect gift for the music lover in your life. Hear life and music at the same time. Go to Bose.com/iHeart to shop now.
You wake up, put on your Ray-Ban Meta glasses. You're living all in. You realize you need coffee, so you say,
hey, Meta, how do I make a latte?
Brew 2 shots of espresso.
After Meta AI gets you caffeinated, you're ready for some beats.
Hey, Meta, play hip-hop music.
You head to meet some friends, but can't remember the place.
Hey, Meta, call Eva.
Ray-Ban Meta glasses, the next generation of AI glasses. Just say, hey, Meta, to harness the power of Meta AI. Shop now at meta.com/smartglasses.
The all-electric Chevy Equinox EV combines everything you need when you're ready to go EV. Starting at $34,995, the 2025 Equinox EV-LT gives you an impressive balance of all-electric range, safety features for peace of mind, and effortless technology, including the 17.7-inch diagonal display screen, all at a price you'll love. The Chevy Equinox EV is the fun-to-drive, all-electric SUV that gives you what you need to do exactly what you want. The manufacturer's suggested retail price excludes tax, title, license, dealer fees, and options. Equipment. Dealer sets final price. To learn more, visit Chevy.com/EquinoxEV.
Traveling to see your fave sports team is cool, but traveling with Amex Platinum for the big game is even better.
Right this way.
With access to dedicated card member entrances at select events, you can skip the line.
And one.
And with access to the Centurion Lounge,
he shoots a three.
You can catch the next game on the way home. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex. Card member entrance access not limited to Amex Platinum Card.